business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be successful? Don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward. Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast. This is episode 108 with myself, Trevor Cowley. As always, Kel Goodman.
What's up, everybody?
Guys, today, well, I would say I have a treat for me. I've been following this guy for a couple years now. Saw a video of his on Facebook that really resonated with me. Didn't know who he was. Didn't know how I came across his content or his page, but I made sure right after that to hit the follow button, which is something that I don't normally do, right? Sure. Facebook's so busy in this day and age. But we've got an individual that's a father, entrepreneur, speaker, business coach, life coach. Is there anything else that I'm missing on your resume? I'm sure it's a little bit longer, but
I feel like that's a really good start.
That's a good start.
That's strong.
Well, there's other things.
Former pastor. Yeah, I've invested in a few companies. Really, like the only thing that really matters, I would say, is that like I'm a dad to Stetson Foster. Like that, yeah. That's going to come first and foremost.
That's why I put father that's first, it. Because even that's in it. The bio on your website, yeah. Said that was the first thing. That's it said it. Father. Yeah. And that just shows you the character of the individual that we have, guys, today. We have Cody Jefferson on the show. I think that this is going to be a treat for everybody. So, one, we appreciate you coming on and spending time with us.
Oh, it's an honor, man.
We've been trying to make it happen for a few months, kind of connecting a little bit in the DMs, but... You know, Cody's a busy man, so we have to find out where he is and go to him whenever we can to try to take
perfect.
A little piece of his time.
I mean, but what's funny, though, you know, is you guys are in St. George. Like, anytime you're in St. George, I'm like, I'm
never going to be there.
Of course, next time I'm in St. George. But now with, you know, the multiple club that I'm an advisor in, you know, we have our quarterly events here at Homestead.
Are you going to do that every single quarter?
Yeah. I mean, we do quarterly events, and this works out perfectly. Centrally located, it's beautiful. We have a great arrangement with the owners,
and I think it's cool because it's away from everything. And I think that's an important piece because we're a part of different entrepreneurship groups.
Yeah,
you know, you fly into a city, but at the end of the day, everybody wants to go out,
right?
And you know, you got the rowdy crowd. Mm-hmm. You know, entrepreneurs are known as listen, a little rowdy.
Listen,
you know?
I literally got off a plane from Miami where I spoke for 4 days. I was in Miami, got home Saturday night late, and jumped on a plane here on Sunday. And so the juxtaposition of going from Miami.
Crazy Miami.
I mean, I'm talking
to
like,
the hills.
Listen, they'll get crazy till 5 a.m. Like, you want to go out? I'm like, guys, it's like 11 o'clock. It's about time for me to put my boots under the bed. Like, we're done.
Yeah. Me, it's like 9:30.
Well, 100%.
I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
I'm ready for a warm glass of milk.
But you're probably like,
nine.
Probably like me waking up at, you know, 4 a.m., 5 a.m. Yep. And so that framing, like you don't have time really to, like, you're going to bed when I'm waking up.
I honestly think it's just prioritizing me, right? Because I
100%.
I have enough data to know when I go out. One, I make very dumb decisions after 10 or 11 o'clock at night with a couple drinks in me.
Listen, I always want to be the life of the party.
Me too.
If you're doing one, I'm doing two.
Like, so I need to make sure I kill that life before it even turns into this demon that's like, out.
I know my frame. Yeah. I know the boundaries.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. One turns into two, and then 20. Yeah. Been there, done that.
That's it.
So I purposely make sure that I remove myself from situations that I know that I don't perform well in. Right.
Sure.
And I think that that's just part of getting older and becoming a little bit more self-aware. I'm like, well, anytime I've been in trouble, it's been one, alcohol late at night, you know?
Right.
I mean, I can put two and two together,
but
it's
sometimes
tough.
It takes a period of time for you to really have that data to look back on. Yeah. It's like, wow, every single time I do this, I feel like shit the next day. I'm unproductive. I've got in trouble. It's just, it doesn't serve me, right?
100%. Well, and every day I'm asking the same question, which is, what needs to die in me to become the man that I said that I would be? Mm. That's it. Every single day since 2016, when I went septic and almost died from stress and just overworking myself. And so now everything is, I mean, it's a metric. Does this confirm who I say I'm becoming? Does it not? Right? And so a choice has to be made. And a decision has to be made. Mm. So everything comes back to the frame, whether it be in my mindset, my head, my heart, my health, my habits, or the four pillars of what I do. Right? Does it confirm or does it deny? Does it take me closer? Does it take me away? And so a decision is made, and that's it. So it doesn't fit in the frame. It doesn't
exist. So the decision matches whether it's contributing to the things that you want in your life, or if it looks like it's going to take away,
right,
then it's off the table.
Which means that we have to be very, very aware of what we want and why we want it, and what those drivers are, and very, very aware of what takes us from that and what plays into the ego, right, and what plays into what will take us away or distract us from the things that we say that we want.
Yeah. You know, I actually saw one of your posts about, it's funny that you're talking about the choice, right? Because I saw one of your posts that was like, you know, overcoming anxiety, and you were having panic attacks at one phase in your life. I went through that.
Yeah.
And I was actually arguing with a family member on Facebook one time when she was like, I don't know how to get over this anxiety. I'm like, you've got to just make different choices.
Sure.
You can literally choose to not have anxiety
yeah.
and these panic attacks because I've been through. And she's like, well, maybe that worked for you. It didn't work for me. They don't want to hear it.
Right.
You know, but it really does come down to making that choice.
Sure. Well, and you know, the hard part about having those kinds of conversations with people who aren't ready to have them, right? Accountability, when it's not asked for, it feels like a threat.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Because the brain doesn't care about what you want. That's not its role.
You're trying to take away that person's excuse.
Well,
and they need that.
Sure. I mean, the brain cares about one thing, which is to stay safe, right? Perceptively.
Of course.
And so it doesn't care what you want.
Right.
It doesn't care that you don't want to have anxiety attacks. It doesn't care that you don't want to be anxious or frustrated or depressed. It doesn't care about those things. It just serves to keep the story and the narrative consistent.
Right.
And so when you come and say, like, well, no, this doesn't have to exist, well, now you're threatening my entire way of living, moving, and being. And so now, like, I have to remove that from the equation because, one, I'm not aware that that actually exists, but, two, it rubs up against me being right, right? And to not be right is to die, right, which is one of our greatest core fears.
Right.
And so it's easier, or not easier, it serves to confirm the suspicion, right, for me to say, no, you're actually wrong, that doesn't work for me, so that I can protect what my brain feels is safest.
Yeah. Right. It's crazy, man, because I, you know, there's a process to it. I mean, I went through a divorce, I went through therapy, I did all this stuff, and I started getting my health right.
Yeah.
And I literally remember the day I was on a run, I was like, I'm not going to worry about shit anymore. And I've never had a panic attack since.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it literally was that one choice, but there was a ton of choices leading up to that. And that's all I was trying to portray to her, like, hey, you know, it's you just got to start doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, but they didn't want to hear it.
Well, and understanding, like, starting to track things, like, what actually makes me nervous? Is it an environment? Mm. Is it a person?
Right.
Right? Is it an ideology? Is it a thought, a belief?
Yeah.
Is it a pattern? Like, what is it?
So is the goal to remove yourself from all of those situations, or is the goal really to just get good enough with yourself that you don't feel it in those situations?
I think it's yes to both. Because the more that you get good with yourself in those situations, the more that you're going to recognize, I don't want to even put myself in these situations, right? And so sometimes walking in love isn't saying that I don't love you anymore. It's just I'm going to walk in distance because this isn't serving either of us.
That's true.
We find this a lot in the development space where, like, if you think of relationships as being tethered by a string, you know, as you start to grow, I mean, I won't say it's up, but for the sake of the conversation, it's up.
Just as an example,
right? We find this in spiritual conversations. If someone's raised with one particular ideology and this is the frame they have to exist in.
That's the box that you stay in.
That's it. This is it. Like, this is how
there's nothing
to be,
outside of that.
Yeah.
Right? This is what's true. Everything else is false. Well, if you start questioning something, you start going your own path, like, you're growing. If this person has to stay here, there's going to be more tension and more tension and more tension to put on that line to where eventually, for the health of both of you, because neither one of you right or wrong. That's not the frame, right? It's just you're comfortable here.
Where you're
I'm
at.
Comfortable growing or more here, asking more questions. So we're going to cut this line so that we can walk in distance because that's going to be love. Otherwise, we're going to have a very visceral snap of that line, and both of us are going to get injured in the process.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most common questions we get because we talk a lot about surrounding yourself with new people, leveling up, and it's like, well, how do I get rid of the old people? And it's like, maybe you don't have to get rid of them, but you need to distance yourself.
Yeah, it's a natural, like, you find that there are fewer things to talk about, and things that used to light you up don't light you up anymore.
Right.
And so there's nothing wrong with you. It's not that I don't love you. It's just, what would you like to talk about? What are we going to talk about? Because if you're still circling the same stories we've been telling for the past 20 years, and I'm over here talking about these things now, like, we lose our sense of synergy in the conversation. Yeah. It just becomes awkward. And so you're not going to want to hang out with me anymore than I'm going to want to hang out with you. We're all drinking buddies, and I don't drink anymore. Like, you're going to ask me to go out, and I'm not.
Well, I think exactly. That's what happened to me, right?
Yeah.
You know, when I was a drug addict, and then that turned into alcohol, which in my mind was cool.
Sure.
It was like, at least it's not drugs and it's legal and I can go buy it.
Yeah.
So I would drown in that or whatever, black out and have an excuse to continue to do it because at least it's not something that was worse, right?
Sure.
But at the end of the day, like, we get people hitting us up all the time saying, well, how do you do it? How do you remove these people? And it's just like, we got one just the other day in DM. Well, these guys really helped me through a hard time during high school. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I part ways with them now that I'm 22, 23 years old? You know, what type of advice would you give to an individual like that that's going from high school, transitioning out to real life? And that's really where the rubber meets the road. Sure. High school isn't real life, sure. Right? And so I basically told the individual, I said, you're not in high school anymore.
Right.
Like in high school, like it's loyalty, stay. But at the end of the day, are you really being loyal to yourself and what your calling is or what you're trying to accomplish in your life? And so you need to figure out what's more important, the calling that is pulling you in a different direction than what they're doing, or do you want to continue to take a step backwards or down to that level, that low frequency level, and just drink and party forever?
Yeah.
Right. And I said, I've got three friends, you know, one's dead now, yep. Overdosed, yep. You know, one's in and out of jail, and you know, one's at least he's sober, but he's, you know, works at a cabinet shop. Right. Yep. And I said, I'm glad I finally made that split in the road and decided just to become my own individual rather than, you know, having to be around these people to have some sort of identity. What would you tell people in terms of, you know, getting to that crossroad? Because it's definitely a lot of youngsters have a difficult time. They know they want something greater, but they're homies.
Yeah.
They got homies.
Yeah.
You know?
Even people our age still.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and so I was a youth pastor for 10 years.
So you're going to be perfect. You're going to be the best answer ever. So everybody, get ready.
Well, no, I don't want to say that. But I have a lot of experience working with teenagers and then working in that transition in and out of college. You know, so many times our relationships are based off of proximity. And so it's easy to be friends in high school and to keep that relationship alive because
you see them
we're
every
together
day.
Every single day.
That's right. True.
There's no way we're not going to be together. And the things that we always do, we're going to go out on Friday, we're going to go out on Saturday, we're going to go after school, we're in the same sports, same whatever. Like there's a proximity. And so because of that, it's very, very easy to stay in the same pocket of proximity. Mm. And so as you get older and as you start to disassociate yourself, there's the frame that I use is there's only so many hours in a day. And you get to allocate what that time is used for. When you're in school, that time is allocated for you. Mm-hmm. Like you have to be in school, so therefore, because of proximity, you're just going to be with your friends.
Right.
Now, can you associate with new people? Absolutely. Will it be more difficult? 100%, because of proximity. Now, when you get out of high school and you're in the workforce, or you're in college, you're in trade school, you're maybe becoming an entrepreneur or whatever. It's very important that you associate yourself with pockets of people based on proximity that are going where you're wanting. This is why masterminds are so important.
Yeah.
You know, this is why
we talk about
why
it all
going
the time.
To going yep. to conferences yep. or, you know,
events,
retreats,
whatever.
Yeah. You know, the same is true. Like when I was in ministry, we would have kids that would come into our fold, because they didn't like the cliquish nature of maybe the community they were part of. Maybe they felt isolated. So we got a lot of kids who, you know, felt like they couldn't go anywhere else, which was great. So it became this hodgepodge. But then again, because they had been dissociated for so long and then find this little refuge, it was easier for them to then dissociate and go their own ways because they already had that. For so many, like we get so accustomed to what's familiar. Again, remember, the brain doesn't care about what you want. It just cares about patterns. So if your pattern has been, we go out on Friday and we get wasted. I'm 25, but I'm still doing the same thing I was doing at 15. Your brain doesn't care whether you want to be successful, whether you don't want to drink.
Just wants
so
the
long
familiar.
As you keep in the same pattern, mm-hmm. you're going to keep confirming your brain's suspicion that you are who you are, and that's all you're ever going to be. So if you want to change the trajectory of your life, you have to change your environment. You have to change what it is that you're doing. And then the most important part, this environment and this change of habits, is accountability. Mm-hmm. You have to surround yourself with new people who are going to see who you're becoming and hold you to that standard. Your friends from high school, your friends that you always had, they're doing the same thing. They're not going to do that. Matter of fact, it's easier for them to pull you down than for you to lift them up
mm-hmm.
because now you're challenging. Remember, accountability that's not asked right. for is perceived as a threat. So now you're telling me that I'm not good enough and what I'm doing isn't good enough. And now you want to put all your new little psychobabble stuff on me and all your mindset stuff on me and all your success stuff on me.
You went to an event, you came back, and you remember now you're a cult member.
You remember where you came from.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah. And so it's again, like sometimes walking in love is walking in distance, and you have to give yourself permission. Fundamentally, we're trying to answer three questions at any given time. Is it possible? Do I have permission? Will you go with me? So one, when you start hanging out with like-minded people and going to environments where this kind of idea and identity is cultivated, you recognize that it is possible, right? You guys can remember what it is to walk into your first mastermind or conference and have your mind blown, like, wait, if you can do it, and I know I'm at least as smart as you, I know that.
Y'all meet at least one dumb motherfucker that's like, killing it.
Listen, you know, listen,
that's just a fact.
If this shithead's going to do it, I can for sure at least do. So you
find
know
the dipshit.
Yeah,
get close to him. Build your confidence. If this guy can do it,
that's
I can.
It. No, I'm just but then you have to then. But then you have to give yourself permission. So many times we go to these types of events because we're seeking for permission from someone else.
Yeah.
Right. We're looking for the permission that our parents never gave us, or that our friend circle that we've always known never gave us. But at the end of the day, it's you giving yourself permission. Mm-hmm. Is this what you want? Then go toward it, regardless of what these people say about you or how you think they're going to view you. Right? The important thing is if this is what you say you want, you believe it's possible, then you have to give yourself permission. And then when you give yourself permission, you have to find the people that are going to go with you. This is why we're all in the masterminds that we are. This is why we all have the friend circle groups that we have. Yeah. This is why we do what we do, because we recognize that iron sharpens iron, not to get super biblical on you, but that is the frame. Mm. You have to be around people that are going to see you, champion you, but then also hold you to your bullshit and hold you accountable to the man that you said that you were going to be.
Right.
Is that iron sharpened iron? That's a Bible quote?
Yeah. Biblical.
Biblical?
It is biblical.
Well, I've just seen it on shirts. It looks like a badass shirt. Like, yeah, it's you like, should have a cool slogan, you know? Yeah, I just didn't know where it came from, right?
OGJC.
Shout out, OGJC.
Shout out to my man, JC, keeping it real.
Moment of silence.
Keeping it real.
OG.
Come on, down for 3 days, up again.
That's good. Coming from that pastor background.
Yeah.
I mean, how close is your relationship with God now that you're moving all these different areas of your life and business? Because like, I know I never had a close relationship with God, but everything I have is because of faith.
Sure.
You know, every leap of faith I ever took and I know how important it is, but I'm like, I don't really know how to deepen a relationship with God, right? Like I try, I pray, I do these things, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, but I know like some people have that figured out and you seem like one of those dudes. It's like, man, you've got your relationship with God. You've got your spiritual side, all of that.
To piggyback on that also, would you feel like your faith is greater outside of being a pastor versus being, you know, has it strengthened over that time? Or do you feel like it was, that relationship was greater while you were actually a pastor?
Yeah, so I would say, one, that I'm still a pastor. I'm more a pastor now than I've ever been. Mm. Yeah, I just get to say fuck a lot more.
Yeah.
And I get to focus on profit as much as I get to focus on purpose.
Yeah.
Right? Because when we tie the profit to the purpose, right, then we cultivate a real passion for what it is that we're called to do in this life, which is to live generously and to live humbly and to live a life of joy and contentment without being complacent. And so for me, the pulpit was always preparation for the platform that God had planned for me. And it wasn't until I stepped out of ministry that I really feel like I was able to step into the call on my life, right? Yeah. Because there was no more politics. There was no more, you have to say this or you have to do this.
You were able to move with more freedom.
100%. And I was able to show a frame of my faith where there was, you know, Richard Rohr, who's a theologian, would have you consider that like there's two halves of life. In the first half of life, you think of it as a hero's journey. It is a man who is, or a woman who there's this sense of needing to prove, needing to find something, needing to journey. And then there's this prodigal moment where you step away because you have to find your own identity. Mm-hmm. And then some shit happens.
Always does.
Oh, it's got to.
It's got to.
Right. Like, and if you're me, like it has to happen times 10 because you're just stubborn.
Yeah.
Right. And so then there's this real ego check. Right. And so then there's this second half of life when you're operating out of grace and you recognize the potential and purpose isn't an expectation that God's placed on you to live up to, but it's a promise that you get to live out of. And because of that, now there, you know, he would say that true spiritual contentment is when there's nothing to prove, nothing to hide, and nothing to protect. So for me, I'm not trying to convert anyone anymore. I don't really care what you believe outside of the fact that like it brings you closer to something and you're not hurting anyone or yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And because of that, I get to live really generously. I'm not trying to convert you to anything, which creates a lot of really great conversations. I don't think I'm right because I don't have anything to prove. And so because of that, like, you know, a belief system. So a belief is nothing more than a thought that you hold on to.
Right.
The problem with spiritual beliefs is that when we hold on to that thought and that feeling so tightly. Anytime it becomes threatened, like that tight held grip becomes a fist. We feel like we have to defend, and so our faith becomes weaponized. And so I would have people consider that true spiritual, you know, contentment, enlightenment, would be that your hand is open, right? And you're allowing those beliefs to dance with, again, nothing to prove, hide, or protect. And when that hand is open, now we can shake hands with everyone.
Mm. So your beliefs are more exposed and you're okay with
absolutely
the way that you are.
Yeah, the
your
Jesus
current belief.
You, yeah, you don't the Jesus story. Outside. The Jesus story is the one that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah.
Because the one that I've known the longest. Now there are frames of, you know, I'm not a biblical literalist, right? So I'm not one who would say that the Bible is an actual historical account of, that's never the way it was meant to be read, or that's not the way that it was written. And so there are elements that some would, you know, call heretical, which I'm, again, I don't have anything to prove, nothing to protect, nothing to hide. So great, you can be right if that's important to you.
Yeah.
You can that's fine. You're good. You can be right. Hell is this. Okay. Cool. Awesome.
All right. Yeah.
Cool. That's fine. If that's what gives you like a compass.
If it helps you great. Move more freely in life, then.
Great. Or not.
Or hold you back.
Whichever.
You're holding you back, not me back right now. So, good.
Yeah. C.S. Lewis would contend that that hell is real, but it's a gate that is locked from the inside. Mm. At any point in time, we can let ourselves out, and that hell is actually a place we create here on earth.
Yeah.
Right? But because, again, the brain doesn't care what we want. It just cares about confirming those suspicions that we don't want to unlock the gate because that would mean that we're wrong.
Mm. Have you seen it be a common theme that a transition normally happens when somebody's at the lowest point of their life, that they have to hit the low in order to make that transition in life and ask themselves those tough questions to find purpose, to find meaning? Or have you seen throughout your years people ask those questions without having to go through the trenches, so to speak, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've met several people who don't have to hit that rock bottom place. It's interesting, though, that for most within the circles that I keep, there is that rock bottom moment. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a polarity thing, like a magnetism, like attracts like.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're fucked up, I'm fucked up. Cool, let's be friends.
Do you think it's just those stubborn type of people that held on to it too long?
Sure.
And then they just crashed and burned, and then they came to themselves and were honest with themselves and asked the right questions.
Yeah, and I think for so many, like, maybe we weren't raised or we didn't have the right framing to really even understand how to deal with those complex questions or issues, or we were obviously, if you're creating those areas of consternation and frustration and angst in your life, like, there's a reason for all of that. And so what is it that we're trying to solve? And what's interesting is as you walk through a lot of these channels, like, you'll find that a lot, they come from either broken homes, or there was some abuse and neglect, or there was some sort of identity crisis. There was a lack of, like, either physical affirmation, emotional affirmation, love languages weren't met. And so you look to fill those voids. And, you know, it's just like anything, you know, when something is not in moderation and gets out of control, it becomes a habit, and that habit is destructive, right? Then most often the only way to rise up is to fall.
Mm. Then you rise back from the ashes. Well,
that's
some
it.
Do.
Phoenix. Yeah.
Some do.
Some do. Some don't.
You know.
Some don't.
I just think it's an important topic for, you know, entrepreneurs in general to understand. Yeah. Like, as we were talking prior to even getting on the podcast, like, you guys have what you consider a purpose right now, and that's being successful.
Yeah.
You know, making 50 grand a month or 100 grand a month, right? That's your target. And you're going to get to a point where you're going to hit that target.
Right.
And then that target feels somewhat hollow, right? Where you realize that there's more to life than money or the dollar. And then that's when you get to a point where you start asking some of those questions. It's like, well, this doesn't feel the way that I thought it would feel. So what do I do now? Right. And then you get to a low place.
Yeah.
What can an entrepreneur do while they're in growth mode? Because it does take a lot of your time and your attention and your energy. Yeah. You've got to give it.
Yeah.
Give it almost everything you got in order to actually build something of real value.
Sure.
So how does somebody, when they're in the build process or trying to grow a business and become successful, balance the individual and the business?
Yeah, right? I mean, we focus so much on enterprise value that we forget interpersonal value.
Yeah.
Right, and so, you know, one of the things that I have everyone ask, I just had you know, our club ask it this morning was like, what do you want? What do you actually want? Because so many drive towards this big number. I want $100 million exit. Why? Yeah. Like, what do you want? Why do you want
cool.
that?
Yeah.
Sounds cool. Like, do you understand the complexities of what you're going to have to face to drive to that number? It's doable.
Yeah.
Right. The business part is never, it's never as complicated as people make it sound. I mean, it's just metrics and numbers and KPIs and being able to look at something objectively.
Yeah.
Right. But what we have is we have an emotional complexity, which is the human being running it.
Mm.
And so the more that we can create habits and patterns and frames and accountability that allow us to master our emotions, right? That allow us to, again, answer the question of what do we want and why do we want it? As it relates to purpose and passion. Again, some people say, I want to build a $100 million company. Where are you at right now? $10 million. Well, what if you actually just want a $10 million company, but you're fulfilled? What would that look like? I don't know. I mean, do you need more money? No. Okay. What are you looking for? I just need more freedom. I'm like, well, do you think freedom's going to come by 10Xing the company that you're already over leveraged in the way things are running now?
If anything, you're going to give up more freedom.
Good
to
grief.
Grow,
like, you don't like, that's like when people say like, oh, just visualize thinking like a millionaire. I'm like, homeboy makes 50 grand a year. He doesn't know how to visualize like what a millionaire feels like.
Yeah.
You might be able to visualize the Lambos that you see on social media, but like, I want you to visualize your accountant and your tax codes. Like, you don't understand. Like, I want you to visualize the employees that you're responsible for when your ad accounts crash. Like, I want you to visualize it that you can't. You don't understand what actually. So we have to work on setting up the habits now, right? In terms of, again, mindset and cognitive belief replacement, in terms of your physical health right now, in terms of your emotional health, your relational priorities and health, like how you are with your significant other, how you are with your kids. Like, we've got to figure all of that out now, because again, what gets measured gets multiplied.
So do you try to focus more on the individual first and what they want out of life?
Sure.
And then you figure out how to build a business around 100%. That life. So people kind of have it backwards. They're focusing so much on the business and what they want out of the business. So they throw their personal life away.
Well, because they think the business is going to solve the personal stuff, and it can't. Mm. It's just a thing. But people think that more money is going to solve the problem, because most of us growing up didn't have money, and our parents always drove towards making more money because money was always scarce. And so we think mom and dad were always stressed. It's why they got a divorce. It's why they don't talk. It's why dad was always working. It's why mom was always crying in the kitchen. So if I can just solve the money problem, like, my family will be fixed.
Yeah, I know for a fact that was me as a young kid, because, you know, the lights being shut off, watching mom cry at the utility. So you realized at a young age money was something that was highly, highly needed and very impactful. And we didn't have that.
Right.
So we had lack because we had lack of money and nothing else. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's at one point where you get out of high school, all I wanted to do was go in a set. I just wanted to make money.
Sure.
I promised myself at a very young age that this is not okay, this environment, looking around, you know, where I lived, the neighborhood, you know, the situation. And I said, I will never live like this.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that that's why I was very money driven. But at the same time, I'm guilty of putting the business ahead of my personal life.
Sure.
When I'm at this level, ahead of my wife or my kids for a period of time. Like, I'm guilty of that just as anybody else. So I'm not trying to tell anybody that we've got it all figured out or anything like that. This is always an evolving journey where we're always looking inside and asking those questions because we're ever evolving beings, right? Or we should be. I just don't think enough people are trying to evolve, and then they get stuck in the pattern, right?
Well, and this is why attaching a why. Right, everybody's like, you know, I've got it on my knuckles. Remember why you started, right? The problem is so many people attach, like, it's my kids. It's all for my kids. Well, the problem is when you start overworking and the business gets leveraged or, you know, tax season comes or something gets hit, and then your kids are like, why aren't you just at my games? Why can't you just be present? Why aren't you? And then you make the mistake of saying, well, everything I'm doing is for you.
Yeah.
This is all for you.
Putting it on the
and
child.
And so now, wait, I'm the source of all your I never asked for that. I never asked for you to build a big business. I never asked for you to try to make all this money because you thought, I just want you to be in my fucking game.
So it's the same concept as growing up poor, looking at your parents, like understanding that money, you put it high up on the platform.
We're just,
so if you have the money and then you put that on them, that I do all this.
Yeah.
You see me stressing. You see me frustrated, angry, upset. All
and what are you doing?
And then you're placing it on that individual or that child.
And you're repeating your own childhood. It's the
same concept, just a different thing.
You're repeating the same process of your childhood. Gotcha. Because, again, remember, the brain doesn't care about what you want. It just cares about repeating patterns that it's always ever known.
Yeah.
And so you're saying, right? Yeah, but I'm giving you all these things. I'm giving you all the things I never had.
Yeah, exactly.
But what you didn't have were active, healthy, loving, fully present parents, because they were always stressed about money being so scarce. Gone. And now money isn't scarce, but you're still absent. And so you're still confirming the narrative that you were growing up in. You're just giving them more shit that you didn't have.
So you think you're breaking the cycle.
But you're not.
But you're not. It's so
no,
true,
that's,
man.
That's big. No, yeah. That's big. I guarantee there's going to be people that will impact, mm-hmm. you know. I appreciate you sharing that perspective with me personally, right?
Likewise.
Because I'm still in the, you know, that's why we want to fire ourselves from our business. So 100%. We can even get more into our family's life because, you know, that's why we've made sacrifices and things like that.
We've been very present in our family's lives, but we have also put the business ahead of a lot of stuff in the family life too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been,
yeah.
I wouldn't say balanced. It hasn't been balanced. It's like,
well,
and then you make yourself miserable too.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Because then you shit on yourself all the time and you feel like guilty about this, things.
That. Yeah. Like almost over judging yourself about everything.
Yeah.
When you're with the family, you feel guilty that you're not in the business.
Right.
I mean, when you're in the business, you feel guilty that you're not with the family.
Yeah.
So how do you kill that?
Yeah. Are you asking?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a framing exercise. We talked about it you guys are visiting us at an event right now.
Yeah.
And so like a block away from your house, you pull over. Right, and this was coined by a guy named Jesse Yule, and I'm sure he probably took it from someone else. But pulling over, breathing, when dad gets home, he sets the tone. And just setting that anchor and recognizing that the second that you drive into that driveway, your kids don't give a shit about your business.
Or how much money you got.
They don't care. Nothing matters.
Yeah.
They just care that you're present, that you're not distracted. Right? Like, I spend a lot of time with my kids. You're on your fucking phone. Like, no, you don't. I could ask your kid.
Yeah.
Right? Like, one of my main drivers is if you ever ask my son, Stetson Foster, if you ever ask him, what's your dad like? Right? Like, when he gets old enough to be able to articulate, he's six, he could tell you, like, we just go on it. We're on adventures all the time. This is, like, we live life. But when he gets old enough, I want my hope would be that he would say, like, for everything that you see on social media, like, that's not him.
Yeah.
He's better. You get to see a fraction of it. He's everything that he says he is, but he's also more. So for me, recognizing that in everything that I'm doing, and for you to recognize that in everything that you're doing, it's wild, dude. You are shaping their personality. Mm-hmm. You are shaping how they give love. You are shaping how they receive love. You are shaping their maturity. You're shaping their personality type, because personalities are driven by our core needs and our core wounds.
Mm.
Right? So, like, I'm a three wing two, which means that I am very loud. I'm outgoing. I'm extroverted all the time. I'm the life of the party. I want to make sure everybody's okay.
Yeah, and everybody's having good. Everybody's good.
And the reason is because I grew up having to manage the emotions of emotionally unstable parents.
In your environment, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so my framing of love was never healthy, reciprocal love. It was, I need to make sure you're okay. Are you okay?
No.
Are you okay? Are you going to kill yourself today? Are you okay? At 5 years old.
Yeah.
And so recognizing like that shaped me. Am I mad about it? No, I am who I am. And I've learned how to navigate through everything, right? But understanding that the way that you approach your child, the way that you speak to them, the way that you discipline them, the way that you set up boundaries for them, everything is shaping who they're going to become. You are responsible for that, for better, for worse. And so when that is the frame, I recognize that when my son is present, and listen, I'll work with my son. Like, I'll show him what dad does, right? He thinks dad's a superhero that helps people live better lives and build bigger businesses for impact. I love that, right? He helps good men become great, and he helps great men create movements. I love that. He thinks I'm a super, I want him to think that as long as he can.
Yeah.
You know? But it's never at the expense of our relationship.
Mm.
And because of how I was raised, which I'm very, very grateful for, I just recognize that there are even things in my son. My son's very affectionate. He's just so affectionate. I want to foster that because one of my core needs is physical touch,
mm-hmm.
right? But say, you've noticed I've touched you several times right. in this conversation. Yeah. Why? Because humans, as adults, we need like 10 touches a day to feel emotionally and physically secure and safe. For kids, it's like 20-something,
mm-hmm.
right? And so for me, I'm always like, and for men especially, we have such a hard time being physically present with each other. Like, you know, we have to hashtag it or we have to qualify it or quantify hashtag it.
Love you, bro.
Yeah, right?
You got to say, bro.
Yeah.
Or throw something at the end of it, you know?
So again, even putting those frames in place so that we're modeling it to our kids in real time. This is what healthy relationships look like. This is what healthy friendships look like. This is what healthy friends talk about, right? This is how we live and move and have our being. So it's so much more than, okay, what happens when I get home at home? It's, well, what are they seeing when we're with friends? What are they seeing when I'm in the workplace? What are they seeing when I bring them into my world? And so fully integrating them into this is who dad is as a whole, or this is who mom is as a whole. But also recognizing that if you're married, if you have a significant other, like how you treat your partner and how you are with them, like they're watching that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're a husband and you have daughters, like your daughters are modeling and watching you, recognizing this is what I deserve and this is what I will settle for and this is what I won't settle for. And your sons are thinking, okay, this is how I treat a woman. This is how dad loves mom. This is how, or, you know, stepmom or whoever. Like this is the frame. And this is the bar that I'm going to set. And so recognizing that you're even setting the bar for your children's like relational.
So features. When you say that you love your spouse and then they see your actions, they associate your actions with, oh, that's how you love.
Yeah, listen, I don't give a shit what you say. Know? Yeah. Right? Like, and your kids don't give a shit what you say.
Yeah.
Like they are the ultimate. Show me what you do and I'll show you what you believe.
Mm. I went to this class, my therapy days.
Yeah.
It was called the inner sentence class. Mm-hmm. And what it was figuring out your core beliefs. What's your inner sentence that you believe about yourself?
Right.
Like, I'm not enough, or I need this to feel accepted, or whatever it is. Like, and it was crazy. It was a crazy experience. But something they said in there that I've always remembered is like, your core beliefs are developed by the time you're 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering what you think, if that's true or not. Because that's crazy to me. Like, I've already screwed up my older kids, you know?
Sure. When they say the frontal cortex isn't fully developed until your 20s.
Yeah.
But I mean, think about it, because everything is so concrete up until 8, 9 years old when you start to think abstractly. Mm-hmm. Right? This is why we love kids that age, because they start to get what we call a personality, right? Before then, everything is concrete, right? This is like, what is it? It's a heights and a fear of falling. They're the only two fears innately that we're born with. Everything else is learned, right? And so the way that they don't see or understand or have the capacity to understand mom or dad, they're just stressed right now. There's a lot going on. All they know is you just yelled at them and charged at them.
That's true.
And so now they have a core fear, right? So now anytime somebody comes at you, like you're going to jump and hold your hands up. So they don't, there's no processing. It is A plus B equals C.
Yeah.
Right? And if I go to give dad a hug and dad's on the phone and he says, not right now, I'm not good enough. I don't receive dad's love. I need a hug, but I am not worth a hug.
Hmm.
So eventually they stop asking for hugs. Because they recognize dad doesn't have time anyway. Because dad wants the thing in his ear.
Attached to his ear. Right. That money. That money. That's the, hey, send the wire. Hey, hold on, kid. Just give me a minute.
Yeah.
We're getting paid over here. You want a roof over your head?
Yeah.
Let me finish the call, right? That's just kind of the mindset, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how would one, you know, you're talking about, you know, looking internal, you help individuals find fulfillment, right? What do you say to an individual that says, well, I get fulfillment from my business?
Yeah, I don't think
that's okay. Or
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
People need to go deeper than, like a materialistic thing, like growing a business or making money or, you know, what would you say to an individual that they say, well, that's where I find meaning?
I would have you consider that it's not in building the business that you're finding fulfillment. It's just in overcoming an obstacle and a challenge. Mm. Right, so some of us, we're just declining mountains. Yeah. Right? Like, it doesn't matter the mountain.
You feel best when you're over.
Yeah. We feel best when we're solving a problem.
Yeah.
Right? Because at the end of the day, that's, again, one of our probably core values or one of our core wounds, right, is we are valuable when we're useful.
Mm.
Right? And so
if you're not solving a problem, therefore you're not useful.
Right. And so, of course, it makes sense, right? Because parenting oftentimes isn't solving a problem. It's being present. Relationships, most of the time, aren't solving problems. It's being present.
Yeah.
And so it's not a problem to solve. So in so many cases, this is why I have so many unhealthy relationships. And entrepreneurship,
that's the problem.
Is because we'll manufacture problems to solve, and we'll manufacture drama because it gives us something to work on. And so we'll create contention in our marriage or in our relationships, even with our kids, not because we want to. And we'll get so frustrated. Like, I just want things to be good. But actually, you don't.
You feel more comfortable in chaos.
You feel comfortable in chaos and fight or flight. Mm. Yeah. Because again, it's not about what you say you want. It's about patterns and familiarity. Mm-hmm. And if you grew up in a home that was a bit chaotic or a bit restless, and that's all you knew, that became the standardization of health or normalization. Yeah. So you can say, I just don't want, like, why? Well, you probably got with someone or paired with someone that was consistent with a parental figure. And so you're creating the same type of dynamic, not because you want to, but because it's familiar, so that it can confirm the suspicion that relationships are hard, that money drives everything into the ground, right? That I have to do X,
Y, Z. So you purposely put yourself in situations to confirm your beliefs.
It's not purposely. It's like unconsciously.
Subconsciously, yeah. You put 100%. Yourself in situations.
Yeah. Okay. So then how you break that is you have to become very, very aware of why you're doing what you're doing, which is a real ego check, which means you have to go down deep. And sometimes that's therapy. Sometimes that's coaching.
Sometimes it's ayahuasca,
right?
No, Cody hasn't done an ayahuasca. But I did not. Ask because a lot of people that do ayahuascas do look... That's the whole purpose, is they want to go find their purpose,
sure.
Right? Like,
yeah.
And they just feel lost. So let's go find the purpose. Let's look inward.
Yeah.
And,
you know. I have a lot of friends and colleagues that have done it, and I love their experience. I love hearing about it. It's not something that I feel called to or that I need to be, you know, a part of. And so for me, like, again, nothing to prove, hide, or protect. Yeah. Rock on with your ceremonies, with your journeys. If that brings you closer, again, without hurting yourself or anyone else, great.
Yeah.
Just not my frame.
Yeah, there's probably multiple ways to do the inner work, right? And whatever calls to you.
Doesn't
make you
a
better individual. Yeah, exactly. That makes you a better individual.
That's it.
Let me ask you this, because I feel like, you know, how old were you when you became a pastor? Because it had to be a
19.
Young age. So 19 years old. So
yeah, what a mess.
Yeah, 19-year-old up there telling 40-year-olds what's going down.
Yeah,
but like, where in your life did you really start asking questions and then start going down these paths? Like, because again, a lot of people have to have something negative happen to them to ask the right questions. Was there a negative situation that made you wake up to asking yourself the right questions? Or were you raised in a religious home and therefore it was just kind of, okay, this is the way I was raised, so that's what I'm going to go do. And then you found yourself throughout the pastor, the 12 years or...
Sure. So I mean, I was raised Southern Baptist. By the time I was a teenager, I kind of fallen away from that. It just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Because again, everything was very, very literal. And so like that just didn't make sense. And so as I was asking questions, there was no one there to solve those questions. So I thought, okay, well, this is just man's way of not, you know, feeling insignificant. And that's fine. That's a good frame for people. That's just not my frame.
Yeah.
And at 19, I was managing a garage, wrenching on cars, and the owner asked me to coffee on a Saturday night. I'm like, sure, yeah, let's go to coffee. He's trying to get me to go to church. I'm like, nah, that's not my thing. And so we went to coffee, and it was inside of a church. And I'd never been to a church like this. It was loud, rock music. You know, the pastor had been kicked out of 3 schools for drugs and alcohol. I'm like, this is my guy.
Yeah.
All right. All right, well,
I'd roll with
I'm like, yeah, I'm like, he rides Harleys. I got a Harley. I'm like, hey, what kind of Jesus do you like? Because that's not the Jesus I
was. He's
like,
OG,
hold on,
JC,
dude. Like, wait, hold on, man. Because because I've been told that, like, if I so much as, like, do anything wrong, like, I'm going, you know, to
hell. You're going to hell, yeah.
And so this was a very different conversation. And so he and I hit it off. I think he saw something in me that I didn't see myself at the time. Mm. And I'm deeply grateful for that. So much of my time in youth ministry was just calling out things to students that they couldn't see in themselves at the time.
Yeah.
And even now, right? It's just cultivating greatness
inside
people.
But when did you start looking inward to yourself? Yeah.
So go through ministry, right? And I've been at a couple churches by this point. I'm 30-ish, and my son's mom was pregnant. We were married at the time. And I was burning the candle at both ends, doing all things to all people, addicted to the affirmation, addicted to the accolades, never feeling like I was enough. And she let me know she wanted a divorce. She just wasn't in it anymore. Okay. Well, that was one thing. So then you already feel like a failure. You feel like you got to do anything to save it. Like recognizing, we're kind of just not like, this is not, you know. But you don't want to be a failure. Well, then 2 weeks later, I suffered a very, very tragic loss of my 18-month-old niece, who was murdered. Mm. And then a couple weeks later, another family member died. And then a couple months later, sister-in-law committed suicide. And then a couple months later, my mentor of 15 years passed away. And then another family member died. And then my best friend of since high school overdosed. And I'm leading all these funerals. I'm leading them all because I'm the pastor.
Yeah.
And I'm leading his funeral on my birthday, my 33rd birthday. And so this was early 2017. And all of this is happening. And I'm praying all the right prayers. I'm tithing. I'm doing all the things. And I'm like, what? Like, something's got to give. Hmm. Something's got, like, this doesn't make sense. So much trauma. And
then, felt like everything was kind of crumbling around
you.
Yeah,
and then my 19-year-old sister went home and was strangled to death.
Hmm.
And I was like, okay, like, but I'm still, the thing is, you would have never known. And this will be very, very...
So you were strong
resonant,
on the outside.
Resonant with your listeners. Like, you're all things to all people, and you're so used to wearing the mask of having all your shit together. Hmm. No one knew until I went septic. So my body gave out 106.8 fever, hormonal shutdown, thyroid scramble. And I was dying.
So you were in fight or flight mode for so long. Adrenals were
adrenal shutdown, thyroid
and
scramble.
And then
like your testosterone for guys like us should be probably around the 600 to 800 range. Yeah. Yeah, I was under 40. I was sub 40.
Jeez.
So like we don't even know how you're not like. We don't even
how did you even get
here.
Out of bed?
Yeah, we don't even know how you got here.
Like yeah.
And so it was at that point that when I woke up a few days later, made my way into the bathroom carrying my little fucking IV stick. Yeah. And I looked at myself, I'm like, is this it? Is this what it's going to be? Mm. Like, this is how your son's going to remember you? Mm. I had just buried my best friend and looked at his 5-year-old son and stopped the funeral that I was leading to go down and talk to him. Said, you guys are all going to have to hold on for a second because I've watched this kid grow up. Like, this is not fucking fair.
Yeah.
So at that point, like, shit's just getting really real with me and God. Like, hey, listen, I've done all the things. I've given you my life.
What are you
doing? I've given you everything.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. What's going on around me right now?
Yeah. And it's not like I'm a victim to all this. It's just like, what the fuck? Like, okay.
If I'm checking
like,
all the boxes.
Are we good yet? Yeah. Like, what am I paying for right now? Are we good?
Yeah. That's the reason.
And so I recognize, like, so in the middle of all of this, I'm having so many friends in ministry put guns in their mouths and kill themselves. And I'm like, okay, like something's like, what are we doing here?
Mm.
Because if I'm facing this and I'm walking through this trauma and you're not, but you feel the pressure of being perfect and performing and having this mask on, something's got to give. So I stepped out of ministry occupationally, right? And stepped into what I do now, which initially was just helping pastors take guns out of their mouths. That was the original tagline. Mm. Didn't fit well on a t-shirt. It really, the marketing, it was not hot.
Iron sharpens iron.
Yeah, the iron sharpens
iron. Listen, guys. Listen. Listen.
Just keep it with the
hashtag,
iron
sharpens. Hashtag pro tip.
Yeah.
And so then, I mean, and I found myself in the same place. Like, there were several times that I just, like, all I wanted to do was kill myself. Like, there was just too much. And I couldn't get out of it. And so recognize that, okay, like if I can change my environment, if I recognize that there is a call on my life, but I want to change the framing of the environment and who I surround myself with, then everything might change. And so as a result of that, like I started looking around. I wasn't familiar with any of like the men's development programs, you know, where they like beat the shit out of you and put you in the ocean and stuff. Yeah. I wasn't familiar with any of that. And that wouldn't have been useful for me anyway. Like I was already beat to hell. And then there was a lot of Christianese programming, that was just like, well, you just got to pray harder. I'm like, yeah, fuck yourself.
Yeah, I've been doing
that. Like, listen, yeah, nobody prays more than I do, okay? Yeah. I've got the badge of honor to prove it.
I was telling other people to do that, too.
I organized the prayer weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, shut up, right? And so I just started to really audit what I was doing. And I started to audit where my time was going. I started to audit what I believed.
Was that something that you did yourself?
Yeah.
Or did you seek help and somebody said,
no, there was nobody to help me.
Gotcha.
So
you were the helper.
I just started auditing all of my thoughts. I just started reading a lot of different books, not because I was trying to. So I had, read for 12 years straight just to prove Christianity was correct and to prove what I believed, right? Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to read just because I don't have anything to prove. I'm going to start reading other books. I'm going to read books that I'd never thought of before. And I started to audit, like, what makes what I believe true?
So you started focusing on helping yourself rather than focusing on helping everybody else.
Right, right. Because for so many of us, we're so bent towards helping other people as a result of thinking that's our purpose. Mm. The problem is it only serves to make us feel whole. Mm. Because there's something in us, again, because of how we were raised or something that we went through, that says, I am valuable and I am useful when I'm helping you solve a problem or when I'm helping you feel whole, because that takes the focus off of me. So I just started putting the focus on myself. And I said, if I don't fill my own cup up, like, I'm going to end up, that empty cup is just going to be the bottom of a bottle.
Yeah.
So something's got to give. So I started just auditing. That's what I have when you say, like, how do you shift?
Yeah.
Like, what I would have your listeners or the people watching, like, start to consider is taking a journal every day and auditing, like, what are you doing with your time? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? Mm-hmm. Right? Because feelings, like, serve.
So journaling was a big
journaling
part
was
of
big.
That.
Journaling was big, yeah. And auditing then, everything then, that
so
I was
when
doing.
When you journal, then you would look back at what you journaled and then think about the thoughts that you put on paper?
Yeah, and so as I'm looking at everything I'm doing, I'm assigning that to what I say that I want. Remember, every morning, what needs to die in me to become the man that I said that I'd be? That means I have to define what that is and who that is and how he lives and moves and has his being. So that means I have to get very, very clear on what I want and why I want it.
What were some of the things that you had to kill in yourself, or habits that you had to kill?
I had to kill a lot of
who you are today.
I had to kill a lot of stories that made me a victim.
Okay.
I'm not a victim to anything.
Okay.
Right? Like, I'm only a victim because it serves to keep me small, safe. And it serves to create a scenario where you feel bad for me because I get love from that. I feel like I'm validated because you understand my experience and you feel bad for me.
Right. Mm.
Right? But that means that I'm a train on fire. Nobody jumps on a train on fire. They may watch it and they wave to it, right? Everybody loves the train that's been to hell and back. It's a little smoky. But ain't nobody jumping on a
ain't
train
nobody
full
rolling
flames.
With you.
You ain't. Nope. No.
Well, right? The other people that are rolling with you, they're on fire.
Right. They're on fire too,
so
right? So
yeah,
misery loves company.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I had to get rid of that. I had to get rid of some of the beliefs that I'd held on to. Mm. I had to get rid of some of the beliefs that I wasn't worth loving unless I was useful, right? I had to get rid of the idea that I can only attract emotionally unavailable people in my life because that was the only frame that I knew was how to fix people.
So how does somebody get rid of things? How does somebody make that drastic of a change? Like
I started associating myself with people who didn't need me.
Mm.
So again, you can't just get rid of something. You have to replace it with something else, right? This is why people will smoke. I'm like, put a toothpick in your mouth. Get something to create that oral fixation.
Just so I talked about drugs and then I went to alcohol. I replaced drugs with alcohol and felt better about it. Right.
So we replace a habit that is serving to confirm who we've always been with a habit, environment, or relationship that serves to confirm where we're going. Right. And so for me, it was, okay, I just started going to personal development entrepreneurial conferences, like day one. Like, I need to surround myself with people who will see who I'm becoming and who can hold me accountable. Like, I was aware enough to know because of ministry, because I didn't have accountability, because so long as numbers were coming in.
You were holding accountability for other people. But,
and recognizing that I was, like, I had to always have the mask on because I was the leader. And even if you're in a small group or like, we're in men's accountability, like, we just want you to be open and share. Bullshit, no you don't.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah.
I always have to maintain the level of authority and leadership because that's my role. That's my job in the church.
Well, if you've shown vulnerability.
Right. Like,
and somebody's
are
like,
you
well,
strong?
Why am I taking advice from
right,
this
fucking wait a minute.
Guy?
Like, where,
he don't got his shit figured out.
Yeah.
I'm not going to listen to that conversation we had last week.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So finding frames where I could find deep accountability with others. And for me, it was with other men,
yeah,
right, that were on a similar path and journey, right? Men that might have been further ahead, but recognizing that I had a very particular skill set, especially as it relates to spirituality, mm-hmm. as it relates to maybe religious indoctrination and how to overcome that. And so finding purpose or path, passion, you know, all the alliteration because I was a pastor, that there were things that I could add value to the conversation as well.
Mm.
And so how do I then also step into my own power while having the humility to be able to have my blind spots checked?
Right.
And that was the catalyst for me, was where are these people? How do I get in the same room with them? I don't care what it costs. I've just got to get in,
mm-hmm.
right? Which then meant that I had to change my mindset around money because money was always hard. Money was always scarce. Mm-hmm. So then I had to dive into what money actually is. I had to examine where those beliefs came from, whether they were useful or not towards who I was becoming, mm-hmm. right? And then I had to put myself in scenarios where that belief was challenged.
So it really comes down, are your beliefs serving you? And how do you find out whether they're serving you? By opening your eyes and looking at your environment.
Right. And looking at what you're doing internal. Yeah.
Looking at what you're doing. Are you fulfilled with the thing, you know?
Right.
Because your environment's like that's the most visual proof that you could have to know whether or not your habits are serving you.
Yeah.
If you're in a shitty environment around shitty people and you feel drained all the time.
Right.
Some things have to change.
If that soil is depleted of any resource, right, the seed's not going to grow. Mm. Right. The seed will grow in fertile soil, so you have to find that fertile soil so the seed will grow.
Let me ask you the difference like between religion and spirituality, right? Because I think my issue is I associated a relationship with God through religion.
Sure.
Like I had to walk in at these doors mm-hmm. in order to have a relationship with God because that was the ecosystem and the environment that I grew in.
Fit in those environments in the churches around
here. Like in Utah, it's very heavy Mormon, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Grew up Mormon, whatever.
Yeah.
And by 13, I decided I'm running with the homies in the neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm done going to church. We're starting to smoke and drink, you know. Yeah. Like that seemed funner.
Listen, Southern Baptist, I felt the same way.
It was like, that was the like I'm 13.
Yeah,
I'm a teenager.
I'm like,
you tell me I can't
use profanity or get tattoos. I'm over here listening to Pac. Like, no.
Yeah. Tell me not to do it. I'm gonna try it multiple times and show you. So
that's it.
And I think that's really to the point where I'm at now is just coming to the realization that you don't necessarily need to go to a certain place at a certain time and be around certain people to have a connection with God or to be spiritual. Right. And to me, and again, I could be wrong, based upon what I've seen or my experiences, right. I got turned off from God or spirituality because of the environment that I saw other people, they would go into this environment, they would put the face on.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's trying to outdo the other person, right?
Sure.
Like, I'm more religious than you.
Yeah.
Or did you hear brother so-and-so or sister so-and-so? Yeah. And then at the dinner table, people talk shit about the other people at church. And it was like, okay, but I just saw you have a conversation with that individual at church. Like, oh, so great to see you.
Yeah.
But then, you see what I'm saying? So then I thought that was the connection to God was through religion. Mm-hmm. What's your take on... you know, religion versus spirituality?
Yeah. Well, one, I think that, you know, when we have those conversations about, you know, people and their framing and what they live and do and how they have their being, like I think there's grace for all of that because so many, like, it's how they were raised,
mm-hmm.
right? And so they don't know any different than, oh, we do this, but then we talk at night like that. Like, there's no...
If that's their normal.
That's the norm.
If that's the pattern.
That's the norm. You know? And so I think we have grace for that. And so for me, it's never an assignment against an organization or against a community of people. It's really recognizing that, you know, I had a buddy that was in Miami with me at this mastermind, shooting some video and stuff. And he travels all over the country and all over the world with some really like big names. And he's like, you know, he's just the sweetest guy. He's
kind of like me.
Human. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, less abrasive.
Yeah.
but
probably taller, less abrasive.
For sure, yeah. Listen, he's taller than all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, you know, it's interesting. Like, I thought I was going to go into ministry, but I just thought that I could create more resources to help people in doing what I do. And he says, so I just want to thank you because you opened my eyes to like what might be possible. I said, you know, bud, you're in ministry right now. The way that you love people, the way that you show empathy towards others, the way that you hold space in conversation, the way that you make eye contact, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, all ministry is helping people feel seen, known, and loved, right? And so you're doing that. And so I would have you consider that you're more in ministry doing what you're doing. You're able to be more generous than you could on a church salary.
Yeah.
Right. You're able to do the things that you feel called to do. You're able to be the person that you feel called to be. You're able to operate integrity in the ways that you feel called to operate integrity. You're more in ministry now than some ministers. Because you're living fully in your purpose. Like, I know several pastors, ministers who are absolutely miserable, but they're so afraid to leave the pulpit.
Based upon what other people might think.
Because of what people think. Because, their entire identity is wrapped up in what they do.
But right. don't you believe you have to get lost in order to find yourself a little bit, right?
Like, well, sure. I mean, but that is the great
tied up in that.
That's the consideration.
Belief,
yeah,
they have to walk away and get lost for a minute.
Yeah,
I mean, in order to find that new identity.
Yeah.
Right?
Otherwise, it's just an indoctrination.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we don't make faith our own, which is again Richard Rohr's you know contemplation and consideration in falling upward, where we have these two halves of life, and there has to be that scenario of prodigal. And then finding one's way, what he would have you consider is finding one's way back home with fresh eyes for the first time.
Mm. Dude, you've been a gem.
Anytime,
you know, I talk to anybody about Cody, right? Because this is the first time we've met in person, you know. There was a kid that met you out in Miami. You said you were going to St. George, and he sent us a message.
Yeah.
What's that young dude that we met up there at the door to door?
Coda.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. He's like, oh, Cody's so great. You know, and then we've talked to many people about you, and they all just shout from the mountaintops how great you are, and you definitely lived up to that and some. So
that's an honor. That's an honor. Had on the show, bro. I mean,
it's just deeper conversations. You know, it's just
people want better relationships. They want better businesses. Yeah. I mean, it all starts with you, and this is like a playbook of like, man, you got to just you got to rewire. You got to question everything, all your thoughts, you know, you got to be a better you if you want to build these great things that you really want.
And again,
or think that you want.
100%. And giving yourself grace. Again, like so many times we put so much pressure on ourselves. And it's even the culture that we are high achievers. We're the 1%. We are driven. We build. And we start to compare ourselves with each other. And that's why we have to ask, what do you actually want? Because bigger isn't always better.
No.
Right? Like it's what is success to you? What is contentment without complacency? What does fulfillment look like? And who are you called to become in the process of that? Right? And when we can help you feel seen, known, and loved in the process of that, right, then we all win. And then everything moves forward with peace and with harmony. And you know, that's for what I do and who I am, that's the main frame of the message that I'm putting forward.
Cool. Guys, just so that you understand, Cody, you do personal coaching, life coaching, business coaching.
Sure.
You've got group masterminds. We did to just barely talk about the importance of finding your tribe or the fertile ground, so to speak, right? So if people want to know more about, you know, individual personal coaching, life coaching, mastermind groups that you're a part of, how would somebody, you know, connect with you?
Let's bypass. I don't normally say this, but this has been a great conversation. Let's bypass all of the formality of applications and going to my website. Just, you're super present on Instagram, so am I.
Very much
so. And probably all of your listeners and watchers are. Just Cody_Jefferson. Just find me on Instagram. Shoot me a message that just says real business owners. And we'll just, like, I believe everybody has a powerful story. Like, shoot me that. I'll shoot you a personal message back. For me, it'll probably be a video because that's just how I roll. And then I'm going to want to know your story. I want to know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I believe so many of us have a story that we're longing for someone to listen to. I love listening to good stories. I've been telling stories for the past 30 years. And yeah. and that's all I do, man.
Yeah,
and all I do is listen to stories and help people tell better stories.
Yeah.
And so shoot me a message. I'll reply. And then I'm going to want to hear your story. And then let's just create a conversation.
Just kind of vibe it out from there to see if you guys are, a good fit to work with.
Yeah.
Now, is everything for me is relational. Group? Is there, do you work with women in business and life? Or is that more the mastermind groups?
So my mastermind is for men. I do work with women one-to-one. I don't market that. Simply because if I start, real talk, if I market to women on the internet in any capacity, just because I'm a fairly charismatic, empathetic, not ugly person.
I was just gonna say, and a good looking
bro,
man.
Bro, like the DMs get weird, bro. Yeah. The DMs get weird. So, like, that's just real talk.
Well, prove it. Show me. show me.
My assistant deletes all of it. Yeah. Like, I'm like, protect my eyes from all of this, like, of all unclean.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want it. I don't need it in my life.
I've repented enough. I don't need it.
Yeah, like, I just don't.
I've already asked for forgiveness. I think I'm running out of forgiveness.
Listen, if it doesn't drive me towards where I'm going, it's a distraction. And so we cut off all distractions. Yeah. We cut off all dead branches. So we cut that off before it ever gets there.
So you guys, listen, here's the deal. 100% of human beings grew up in an environment and grew up and got to a point where they were handed down a belief system,
100%.
I guess is the best way to put it.
Yep. Right.
And it's a belief system that is probably fucked up. Right. If you're young and you're in your 20s listening to this, you probably maybe haven't hit the point of life yet where you're 30, 35, asking yourself some of those deeper questions. I'll tell you this right now, 100% of human beings need to do internal work.
Yep.
And I'll tell you this much. I would say 90% of human beings aren't doing any internal work. And that's why you see people walking around looking like zombies. They feel like shit. They're not happy with themselves. They're not happy with their finances. They're not happy with their relationships. And this is why an individual like Cody exists in the world. I really believe that he's a blessing on this earth for individuals that are lost that want to be found. Because some people are lost and they don't even want to be fucking found.
That's good.
Cool. Stay. That's good. Be gone. You know, like, look, there's drug addicts that they flat out will just say, I'm going to be a drug addict forever.
Sure.
They own that shit.
Sure.
Cool. If that's you, then own it and rock with it.
Yeah.
But if you're really actually ready to do some internal this deep dive, some real shit, and break some of the habits or some of the patterns that you know for a fact aren't serving you, hit the man up.
Yep.
Hit the man up. He's a good man. He'll tell you, he'll shoot you straight. He'll tell you how it is, and he'll give you the roadmap that you need to find yourself so that you can become a better individual for your family, for your business, for your employees, for anybody that ends up ever even meeting you just in general in your ecosystem, and just shine more light onto the world. Right. And that's what Cody's doing. We appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. Been an honor.
Yeah. No, I can't wait to go back and listen to it myself, you know,
sure.
which is rare. We have a previous guest in the room, Tony. I did listen to yours too, dude. So,
and if it didn't, even if he didn't, he's got to say he did now. He fucked himself.
I'm fucking with you, bro. I didn't even listen to it. No, I'm just kidding. I did. But no, guys, reach out to Cody. We hope you enjoyed this episode. I know for a fact it's going to be impactful to the individuals that are ready for that moment.
Yeah,
right? Because
absolutely.
Sometimes it's just whatever.
Right.
If you're not ready, you're not going to hear the shit that
we're ready
that
to
we
our own
to
level
say.
Of awareness. Yeah.
So make sure you share this with an individual that you know might need to do some internal work, or an individual that may be struggling, you know, mentally, emotionally. You know, the suicide stuff that we talked about.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of people out there struggling right now in 2021. And,
sure.
And information, these individuals need the information. And, you know, Cody's that guy. So we hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Do us a favor. Keep kicking ass. Taking names. Take care.